Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, November 9th, 2023. I'm your reader, Mary Francis, and you are listening on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Taking a look at the front page of the Courier today, big headline, Laudick wins in landslide, and it shows a photo of Cedar Falls mayoral candidate Danny Laudick smiling with a drink in his hand. It says he's meeting with supporters at the Pump House Pub and Grill before results from the election were announced on Tuesday. Other stories on the front page. Runoff set in Grider Simon race for council. And Chrisman Hawbaker Lotta top at the polls. So we'll dig into our cover story. Laudick wins in landslide. 78% of voters favors Red Cedar executive in race against Burtis. The cordial two-person mayoral race ended in a Danny Laudick landslide victory on Tuesday. Laudick, age 35, executive director of startup Catalyst Red Cedar, beat out Walter Burtis, age 34, owner of downtown pub Brass Tap, with 78.43% of the vote. Laudick received 5,357 votes. Burtis had 1,433 votes. Both were seeking public office for the first time. "The big thing is gratitude," he said in reaction to his win. "This was a lot more than just me." He rattled off all the participants in his campaign, from those who put out campaign signs to those who served on his campaign committee or donated to his campaign. "What are our shared priorities and what do we want to focus on?" said Laudick about his first day goals with three new council members at the dais. Laudick, who's got loads of experience in community and business development, pushed a platform of bringing together a diverse group of people to create a shared vision and never leaned on just one issue. He also placed a heavy focus on being a partner with stakeholders and not wanting to create barriers while getting back to trustworthy government that can work together. Laudick also saw quality of life as a focus for smart growth. Mayor Rob Green did not seek re-election to a third term out of a desire to spend more time with his family. Three incumbent city council members also did not run again. Burtis was a little bit more critical in his approach during his first run for office. He wanted to take a harder look at the city and see what opportunities exist. Quote, "Transparency, wasteful spending, and property taxes are certainly not bad topics to hit on," said Burtis. He pinpointed Laudick's supportive base in his victory after his opponent started campaigning a few months before he did. Quote, "I will not rule out running a campaign again, even though we got clobbered this time," he said. The quote continues, "Kudos to Danny. He ran a great campaign. I hope he upholds the promises of his campaign, and I look forward to seeing the community move forward together and making progress." Next story from the front page. Runoff set in Grider Simon race for council. Candidates top finishers in Waterloo at-large election. And there's a photo, and it shows Waterloo City Council at-large candidate Steve Simon smiling broadly, meeting with supporters at the Majestic Moon before results from the election were announced on Tuesday. He led the way with 44% of the vote, leading to a runoff with Jonathan Grider. Dateline Waterloo. The race is not over for two men vying for Waterloo's at-large city council seat. Jonathan Grider and Steve Simon will head into a runoff election in 4 weeks after winning the most votes Tuesday night. None of the four candidates garnered more than 50% of the votes needed for an outright win. According to unofficial results from the Black Hawk County Auditor's Office, Simon received the most votes at 2,923, about 45% of ballots cast. Grider won 2,194, or almost 34%. Corey Holmes received 861 votes, or 13%, and Ashley Chappelle received 521, or 8%. Grider, currently the Ward 2 council member, said he expected the result due to the number of people on the ballot. He said his campaign is, quote, "more than prepared," unquote, to continue pounding the pavement. He noted he has knocked on more than 4,500 doors. Grider said He has fought for Waterloo's future and will, quote, continue to have that conversation with folks over the next month, unquote, stating that his campaign really represents all of Waterloo. Quote, I'm more than happy to draw that contrast on whether we should move Waterloo forward or to the days of the past, he continued. Simon said he's happy winning the most votes, but next month will be, quote, a whole new ballgame. Quote, there's a lot of dynamics to be played out and hard campaigning by both of us for sure, Simon said. It'll be a race to get other people's votes and new votes. It's a whole new election, unquote. And the third story there from the front page, Crisman, Habaker, Latta top at the polls. Two of the three faced challengers in Cedar Falls council races. Hannah Crisman won the three-person at-large city council race, a no-nonsense candidate with experience working with city officials. Crisman, age 33, will replace Councilmember Dave Sires, who did not run for a second four-year term. The College Hill Partnership Board president and Planning and Zoning Commission member collected 3,209 votes, or 55.85%. She beat out Patrick McElhaney, age 38, who is a media specialist in the University of Northern Iowa, who got 1,680 votes, or 29.24%. Donna Bash, age 52, a yoga instructor and substitute teacher, received 814 votes, or 14.17%. In the Ward 4 council race, winner Aaron Habaker, age 55, an attorney, garnered 817 votes, or 55.7% of the ballots cast. Financial advisor Gabe Groothuis, that's Groothuis, age 26, tallied 648 votes, or 44.2%. Habaker will replace Simon Harding, who also did not seek a second term. Crisman needed more than 50% to avoid a runoff. She was resting on the couch at home with her dog Margaret while speaking about the results. Quote, I'm thrilled and appreciate all the people who voted for me, she said. Crisman thought she was successful because of her experience. Quote, I felt comfortable in my knowledge of the issues that people really cared about, she said, and I wanted to see progress continue by finding real solutions. Her first steps will be setting goals and determining what to focus on. She said the College Hill Vision Plan and the Resilience Plan are the first things she'll look at. Habaker was celebrating with friends, family, and supporters at Cooper's Tap Room. Quote, I'm happy and humbled to have received the results we did, and I look forward to getting to work with the new council on issues that had been lackluster, he said. His focus will be on the College Hill Vision Plan, as well as planning for rebuilding the Hearst Center for the Arts and the future of the Sturgis Falls Festival. I will work, quote, across interests to reach community goals, he said. Going into the first meetings, he said, he'll be supporting fairly conservative budgeting, as has been a priority of city officials in the past. There was one more council seat expiring in Cedar Falls. Chris Latta, age 39, a director of behavioral health, will be the Ward 2 council member. He received 600 votes as the only candidate. There were 9 write-in votes. He'll replace 20-year council member Susan DeBuer, who did not seek another term. And turning the page, Cedar Falls Council okays police cameras, $1.4 million contract over 10 years to equip officers and vehicles. Dateline Cedar Falls. Public safety officers will receive new police body and vehicle cameras, the city officials have said are very much needed. The City Council on Monday unanimously approved a 10-year contract with Scottsdale, Arizona-based Axon Enterprise, Inc. for an estimated $1.41 million. That's $141,471 annually for 13 in-car and 78 body-worn cameras and systems through the same provider that Waterloo has utilized. Mayor Rob Green said, as many as 4 instances have spurred public complaints during his nearly 4 years in office and required a review of footage. Quote, we've used body camera footage to be able to see what really happened there. Those body cams have been incredibly important for us, and having high-quality cameras is certainly a priority for the city. The body cameras date back to 2016, said Public Safety Director Craig Berte. The vehicle cameras were installed a year or two before that. Police Chief Mark Howard had considered it a failure that they hadn't purchased new ones sooner. Quote, I say a failure because we should have been on this a long time ago, and you know I've been in this position long enough to point that finger at myself, he told the council in June. Council member Dustin Ganfeld was critical, even though Berte noted the department has not been compromised. The director said that being smart in its use of vehicles allowed the department to overcome any challenges. The department made sure any officer not needing a camera for an assignment did not take a vehicle that had one. Nonetheless, the new technology will be a welcome addition. Quote, now we'll have our body and car cameras aligned all together, he said, in pointing out the benefit to taking action now. The quote continues, previously our purchases were done separately. Fleet Maintenance Supervisor Dustin Rodden said one police vehicle was without a camera, another had been sharing components for wireless uploading. But Ganfeld wondered aloud if an external department evaluation that he's advocated for would have helped identify the need earlier. Quote, I'm just curious if an audit might have caught something like this, he said. Howard has said the department is limping along with current technology, which inhibits the speed footage can be downloaded and accessed. Quote, what we've learned is technology flew past us in the process. In 2014, when we were one of the first agencies to get body cameras, and we were leading that charge in 2016 when we ended up with the ones we have now, which were top of the line. The department is taking on one more camera than the 12 it has now, Berte said. The 13th vehicle is the city's new emergency medical services/rescue SUV that the department says is being used for medical calls, inspections, traffic assistance, building entry, and towboats and trailers. The number of body cameras is a drop from the approximately 90 that the department has now. That's a cost-saving measure. The plan is to create a pool of them and share more amongst personnel who don't need them all the time, said Berte. There's no denying the fact that industry costs have skyrocketed, though. Quote, there was a time we bought 8 body cameras for $1,300, and then 2016, I was the assistant chief, we bought new cameras for $60,000, and here we're talking about a 10-year deal for $1.4 million. The cameras are expected by the courts and public in this modern era of policing to offer a replay of an incident. Quote, we need to make sure our citizens are safe and we have accountability for wrongdoing in today's climate by getting the best technology possible, said Ganfeld, the Public Safety Committee chair after the meeting. Berte expects them to be installed in the spring. The vendor was chosen largely because of the speed and cloud technology it will offer when it comes to downloading, sharing, and storing video. They'll replace the ones that were provided by WatchGuard Inc., which is now a subsidiary of Motorola. It was one of the other providers considered by the department for this latest purchase. WatchGuard does not carry the technology necessary to support what Cedar Falls currently has in place by offering fixes and replacements. Quote, on several occasions, the current systems have failed and the system's warranty has expired, Howard said in a memo. The quote continues, replacement equipment is no longer available for the current system, and we have had to take cars out of service to use that equipment to keep other recording systems working. Several of the current body-worn cameras are also no longer functioning and cannot be replaced or repaired, unquote. The council earmarked $240,000 in the capital improvements program that it approved in January for some of this cost. The remaining years of the 10-year contract will see that absorbed by the police department's operating budget. Our next story on page 2, Vietnam War veteran who was captured and tortured by the Viet Cong to speak at Cedar Falls AMVETS. Dateline Cedar Falls. Torture will not be a term used lightly at the Guy W. Iverson AMVETS Post 49 on Veterans Day. Commander Ron Kirkland said, The AmVets will welcome Bob Livingston, a Vietnam War veteran who was captured by the Viet Cong and badly treated while being held hostage by the enemy. Livingston will be the special speaker during the AmVets annual program starting Saturday at 6 p.m. The post is located at 1934 Irving Street. He was a young adult serving as a U.S. Marine Corps sniper at the start of the war in 1965. He miraculously found a way to escape captivity and return to the Americans. 50 years later, Livingston, in his 70s, is emerging from his battles with post-traumatic stress disorder. Organizers said people will be astounded and horrified to hear the Waterloo man describe what he went through. The event is geared toward adults because the details will be graphic and explicit. An opportunity will be made available to ask questions. Quote, "This guy is a war hero," said Kirkland, a Navy veteran from Evansdale who served from 1965 to 1971, including two tours of Vietnam. Quote, "It takes a while to deal with the savagery because when you come back, it's still in your head. There's always the savagery with any war, but the challenge is putting that savagery in a file cabinet inside your head and locking it up or putting up a wall so you don't think about it," unquote. Additionally, Kirkland will speak about PTSD and the potential for suicide among veterans. Quote, "Vietnam veterans had to blend into society after their experiences. What they had to suppress within themselves stifled them," he said. That's because, Kirkland said, they had to deal with the hatred that came with being a Vietnam veteran at the time because of the public's opinion about the war. The Post will have its traditional punch bowl as well. One person will talk about a particular liquor and how it relates to a past conflict and the time period. Then someone will pour a whole bottle and another will stir the drink inside the huge bowl. Once all of the conflicts are mentioned and all of the liquor is poured and swirled, it will be time to grab a dipper, a cup, and take a sip. Non-alcoholic drinks will be available to mix. Additionally, a prisoner of war / missing in action missing man table will be set up and introduced, and the University of Northern Iowa Reserve Officers Training Corps cadets are expected to be in attendance. The program will run until 7:30 or 8. A cocktail hour will precede it. Our next story from page 2, Waterloo's largest housing project in at least 20 years. Dozens of new homes are expected to be built this spring in southern Waterloo to the benefit of area employers and families with children in the nearby school. Stakeholders came together Tuesday along the paved drive in the 5400 to 5500 block of Kimball Avenue to celebrate what's been called Waterloo's largest housing project in at least 20 years. Ground was broken on the first 64 of the eventual 240 to 250 lots now for sale as part of the first edition of the Paradise Estates subdivision located north of Orange Elementary School. Work technically began in September as dirt was moved and all the water, sewer, storm lines are being put in the ground. Quote, "Stop out and take a look. It's a beautiful area surrounding the school. It's going to be nice," said Corey Hodap, owner of the North Liberty-based CJ's Construction, which is in charge of preparing the lots. Quote, "The community needs housing. It's a definite need. There are a lot of people looking for lots to build, and there's just not very many lots, so there should be demand," unquote. The lots between 14 and 22,000 square feet, or less than half an acre, are listed for between $75,000 and $90,000. Quote, "The schools have always been a magnet for our new housing, and with the proximity to Orange School, certainly we're expecting this to be a very successful project," said Bob Manning, executive director of the Cedar Valley Home Builders Association. The rule of thumb is that single-family homes cost four times the price of the lot to construct, according to Manning. If there's a lack of interest from builders, CJ's may start constructing houses on its own. Quote, "Now there are some challenges out there in the real estate world," said Manning, and these folks said, "Hey, we're okay with that. we're going to step up to these challenges and get this property developed and provide more homes for Waterloo and Cedar Falls. I know the people of VGM and Mercy One are very excited. This will be one of the closest residential areas that they can move into, unquote. What is constructed is ultimately up to the buyer. That being said, it's been, quote, a bit of a longer road to get to this point, said Melissa Hodapp, who is CJ's broker. And she and others were complimentary of the support for the project. Quote, there's been more community support and involvement than any of the other developments I've worked on, she said. Some more news from the election. Creighton Smith wins Ward 4 race. She easily beat out two others and will retain seat. Belinda Creighton Smith, originally elected to fill a vacancy on the city council, was elected to a full four-year term Tuesday night. She won the election for the Ward 4 seat with 679 votes, or 67%, according to unofficial results from the Black Hawk County Auditor's Office. Sarah Shervaney received 256 votes, or a little more than 25%. Josh Gramlich received 75 votes, or a little more than 7%. She was first elected in March to fill the seat after former council member Jerome Amos Jr. began serving in the legislature in January. She won 74% of the vote in that election. She held a campaign watch party with reelected Mayor Quentin Hart at the Best Western Plus Executive Residency Hotel downtown. She and her supporters were ecstatic to hear the results. Creighton Smith said she was happy, excited, and overjoyed. Quote, the people really showed up and made a decision. They believed in me, she said. The quote continues, I'm going to continue to fight for Ward 4 and the community and the city of Waterloo, unquote. Once her new term begins, she wants to put a heavy focus on infrastructure and facilities in her ward. Some of her goals are working on rehabilitating or demolishing dilapidated buildings, keeping a swimming pool on the east side of town, building new housing, and making sure all residents make a livable wage. Also Tuesday, at-large Councilmember Dave Bozen was reelected, this time to the Ward 2 seat, with 1,240 votes, or just over 98% of the votes. He ran unopposed. And then there's a photo of Ward 4 candidate, and now elect, Belinda Creighton Smith, laughing with Tavis Hall as they await election results. Another story about the election. Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart reelected for his fifth term. Mayor Quentin Hart will continue at the helm of the city after being elected to his fifth term. Hart received 68% of the vote, or 4,580 votes, in Tuesday's election, according to unofficial results. His opponent, Wayne Natham, received 32%, or 2,125 votes. Even though he's been the mayor since 2015, Hart said he still has a lot of work to do. Quote, I'm so thankful for the trust and support from this incredible city, he said. I look forward to waking up tomorrow and getting right back at it, unquote. From his campaign party at the Best Western in downtown Waterloo, with cheers and applause in the background, he said he's going to work with city staff and residents to, quote, build a better Waterloo, unquote. In his next term, he said he wants to put focus on continuing to work on the Waterloo fiber system and look at development around the Crossroads Mall area. He also wants to continue every step in his 2030 vision plan. Those steps include developing a sense of pride, developing or renovating 800 houses in the city, uniting neighborhoods, growing the city's workforce, focusing on the Crossroads Mall and Lost Island area to create a sports and recreation center, showcasing downtown, becoming a recreational and sports-focused town, and eliminating barriers faced by Waterloo residents. And we've got more election news from the Cedar Valley page. Incumbent, three newcomers win CF school board seats. Six candidates duked it out Tuesday night for four available seats on the Board of Education. In the end, one incumbent was elected and three new faces will join the board. The top vote getter was incumbent Nate Gruber. with 3,786 votes, or 17.86%. That's according to unofficial results from the Blackhawk County Auditor's Office. Former board member Jeff Orvis, along with newcomers Bette Peterson and Megan Witt, respectively, received votes totaling 3,652, or 17.23%, 3,373, or 15.91%, and 3,166, or 14.94%, to secure the other four-year terms on the board. Gruber expressed his thanks to the people of the Cedar Falls Community School District for, quote, continuing to have trust and confidence in me to elect me to another term. He promised to continue to do all I can to represent everyone in the community. He also congratulated the other candidates who were elected to the board and the two others who were running. Orvis expressed a similar sentiment, also extending thanks to outgoing directors Jeff Hassman, Susie Hines, and Joyce Coyle for their leadership and service to the Cedar Falls schools. Peterson said she is looking forward to working with my fellow board members to continue to make Cedar Falls schools a place for all to learn and thrive. Witt, who finished just 20 votes ahead of Tony Wood, thanked the voters as well. Quote, I want to express my sincere gratitude to everyone who supported my campaign. I am excited about the future for Cedar Falls students, and I look forward to getting started, he said. Wood garnered 3,146 votes, or 14.84%. Other candidates included Jordan Burr, who got 14.54%, and Jordan Vernoy with 916, or 4.32%. In a separate election to fill a two-year vacancy for one other board seat, Jenny Leeper received 98.39% of the total. She was the only candidate on the ballot. There were also 85 write-ins. Another election article. Mills and Schmidt come out on top in Waterloo School Board at-large race. The race for Board of Education members representing the entire Waterloo Community School District was split almost evenly, but the two incumbents will remain in their seats. At-large incumbents, Stacy Mills and Lyle Schmidt, will each serve another four-year term. Mills received the most votes with 3,700, that's 35% almost, and Schmidt received 3,546, or just a little more than 33%. John Barry, who was running for the first time, received 3,328 votes, or just over 31%. This will be Schmidt's 10th term on the board for a total of 30 years. He said he's honored that the residents have supported him for this long. Quote, it's just very humbling that the public has faith that you will do a good job, he said. So my part is to do a good job, unquote. He hopes to get to work on addressing the district's academic performance, which has slipped since COVID-19. He also thinks providing new ways of educating students will help them perform better, such as hands-on learning. Quote, students seem to respond to that much better, especially since a change in attitude about education since COVID, he said. Attendance has become an issue, so we have to change what we offer to make it interesting enough that students want to come and learn. Mills will be serving her second term on the board. She said she breathed a huge sigh of relief once she saw the results. Quote, I feel really honored that the people in the school district really want me in this position, and that hopefully they voted for me because of the things I've done and what I'm going to do, she said. It validates what I've been doing. She recently joined the district's equity committee and hopes to teach parents how to advocate for their children because she's been in the position where her son needed extra help. She also wants to connect more to the smaller cities in the district to discuss their issues, noting the lack of preschool programs in Evansdale and Elk Run Heights. Although Barry lost by just over 200 votes, she said he ran a great campaign. Quote, it was all so close. All three of us were very close. And no matter who had won Waterloo was going to be well represented, she said. I will make sure the people that entrusted me with their votes, I will make sure that I serve them well. In Director District 2, Jonathan Cox will take the spot of current board member Sue Flynn. Cox received 1,465 votes, or almost 99% of the vote. The District Director 3 race was also uncontested. Incumbent Jesse Knight will have a third term after receiving 99% of the vote, or 1,749 votes. And that's the halfway point of today's Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. My name is Mary Francis, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We're so happy to have you listening. And we'll continue on with election news. Anderson elected mayor of Waverly. Former pastor gets 70% of the vote Tuesday night. Mark Anderson has been elected mayor of Waverly, defeating Timothy Conges. Unofficial results show Anderson received 1,329 votes. Conges received 553. Anderson voiced gratitude for the support he received throughout the campaign and for those who turned out to vote. He said he appreciated the campaign that Conges ran. Quote, "I want to express my gratitude to the voters of Waverly for entrusting me with this work, and I want to thank my opponent for a very civil discourse. And I hope both of our campaigns can be a model for civil conversation in government," unquote. Anderson was pastor at the St. Paul Lutheran Church until retiring at the end of July. The newly elected mayor said he was celebrating with his supporters at the other place. Anderson will serve a 2-year term. The next order of business, he said, is to attend board and commission meetings as a guest. He wants to get up to speed with not only the goings-on of Waverly, but also the city's workings. Quote, "I want to, by the time inauguration comes, have a more in-depth understanding of city government and how it works," unquote. Elsewhere on the ballot, Jennifer Wolf, elected to represent Ward 2 on the council, defeating James Redemecker with 67.9% of the vote cast. Current Ward 2 council member Julie Myers won the at-large seat with 96% of the ballots cast, running unopposed. No candidate was on the ballot for the Ward 4 council seat, although a total of 185 write-in votes were cast. And elsewhere in Bremer County, incumbent at-large candidate Mark Richmond won re-election of the Denver or to the Denver City Council with 41.9% of the ballots cast. He'll be joined in the other at-large seat by Curtis Junker, who garnered 268 votes, or 36.4% of the ballots cast. Denise Urich also ran for the seats, receiving 148 votes, or 20.1%. And Waverly Shell Rock voters fill 3 Board of Education seats, Dateline Waverly. 3 seats on the Waverly Shell Rock Board of Education were filled Tuesday night. Director District 2, Sean Ellerbroek, defeated April Krutzinger. Ellerbroek got 69.42%. Krutzinger, who campaigned as the parental choice candidate, received 30.49%. Ellerbroek thanked Krutzinger for running a good race and said he's looking forward to getting started. In Director District 3, incumbent Dennis Epley received 80%, beating Christopher Holthaus, who gathered 19.5%. Epley is the current president of the board and longest-serving member. He was first elected in 1993. He expressed gratitude for winning another term. Quote, "I'm very excited to continue to work for the Waverly Shell Rock School District," he said. "My sincere compliments to all of the people that worked on my campaign. They pulled me through and helped me get elected," unquote. Holthaus was vocal in bringing awareness to the issue of bullying within the school district. In Director District 5, Jordan Shanks was the winner, running unopposed. 36 years old, he's the director of sales for LockNet in Waterloo. He received 1,980 votes. In this newly constituted school board, will be tasked with hiring a new superintendent, Ed Klamfoth, that's K-L-A-M-F-O-T-H. Longtime Waverly Shell Rock Community School superintendent is retiring this summer. And now we'll turn to obituaries. Ruth A. Nicholson, age 86, born April 24, 1937, passed November 4th, 2023, at the Waverly Health Center. Graveside services with interment will take place Tuesday, November 14th, 11 a.m., Cedar Valley Memorial Gardens in Cedar Falls. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Cedar Valley Hospice, Lock at Tower Park. James Jim P. Moore. Visitation, Thursday, November 9th, that's today, 5 to 7 at Lock at Tower Park. Funeral service, Friday, November 10, 11 a.m. at Nazareth Lutheran Church in Cedar Falls. Burial will follow the funeral service at Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery with full military honors. Memorials directed to the family. Mary Teresa Huber, born December 15, 1951, passed November 5th, 2023. Let's see. Her service of remembrance will be held in the spring. Karen Ray Weichers, that's W-E-I-C-H-E-R-S, age 71, passed away November 7th. She was born June 26, 1952. Visitation, Friday, November 17, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Bethany Presbyterian Church in Grundy Center. Funeral service, Saturday, November 18, 10 a.m. at Bethany Presbyterian Church in Grundy Center. Patricia Ann Anders, born June 27, 1937, passed November 5, 2023, at the Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo. Memorial service, Saturday, November 11, at the Haggerty Wacoff Graroop Funeral Service on West Ridgeway. That'll be 11 a.m. for the memorial service there. Burial at Mount Olivet following the service. There will be a public visitation Friday, November 10, at the same place from 4 to 7. And then another visitation will take place 1 hour prior to the service on Saturday at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to the Cedar Valley Hospice Home. Shirley Westrom Mattson passed away November 3rd, 2023. Services will be Friday, November 10, at the Grace Church, beginning at 1 p.m. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be directed to Grace Church in Marshalltown. And that's it for obituaries today. And now we'll go back to some serious local news. Burn barrel slaying trial headed to jury. Savon Jordan, age 26, faces murder charge in Howard. State rests its case in Howard County burn barrel homicide trial. Dateline Cresco. The state has rested in the case of a New Hampton man whose torched remains were found in a burn barrel behind an Elma home in November of 2022. Attorneys for Savon Jordan, age 26, declined to offer any witnesses, instead relying on cross-examination of prosecution witnesses during the 3 days of testimony. Closing arguments are slated for Wednesday in Howard County District Court in Cresco. Jordan is charged with first-degree murder and abuse of a corpse to conceal a crime in the disappearance and death of his friend, 30-year-old Jonathan Esparza. Prosecutors allege Esparza had stolen 4 or 5 pounds of meth from Jordan's home while Jordan and his girlfriend were asleep in the early morning hours of October 13, 2022. Friends say Jordan suspected Esparza and threatened that someone was going to die over the theft. Esparza denied stealing the meth, and he told Jordan that he would help him find the culprit. Esparza was last seen on the night of October 20, 2022, when he left his home, telling a friend he was going to Elma and would be back in a few hours. That night, neighbors reported seeing a large bonfire behind Jordan's home. The fire burned for several hours. One resident said, Jordan was carrying wrapped-up packages to the fire and putting them on the flames. When police questioned Jordan about the disappearance, he said he'd been driving back from a wedding in Texas on the night that Esparza disappeared. In November 2022, authorities executed a search warrant at Jordan's home, and they found more than 1,100 bone fragments in a burn barrel in the backyard. They also found two bullet holes in the concrete wall of his basement, along with two fired shell casings and two bullets. Investigators seized a large axe from the home. Experts said DNA on the axe was consistent with Esparza's profile. Forensic experts matched frontal sinus contours from pieces of the charred cranium with an earlier CT scan of Esparza's head to identify the remains. And here's another piece about the same case. How burn barrel victim was identified explained. Forensic experts testify at Howard County murder trial. When authorities found pieces of bone among the ashes in a burn barrel beyond Savon Jordan's home in Elma in November of 2022, investigators were tasked with determining who they belonged to and how they died. The challenge was compounded by the fact that most traditional tools, like fingerprints for identification and signs of trauma for a cause of death, were all burned away. On Monday, jurors in Jordan's murder trial learned how two experts, forensic anthropologist Heather Garvin and Associate State Medical Examiner Michelle Catellier, that's C-A-T-E-L-L-I-E-R, were able to piece together the remaining bones and eventually link them to Jonathan Esparza, Jordan's friend who had disappeared about a month before the discovery. DCI agents and Howard County Sheriff's deputies who searched Jordan's home on Main Street were able to pick out five shoebox-sized containers worth of obvious bone fragments, which were passed along to Garvin along with a plastic storage tote filled with other charred debris they hadn't sifted through. Garvin examined the tote and recovered even more pieces. In the end, she had more than 1,100 human bone parts, 249 of which she was able to identify. She began piecing together what she had. She identified some fragments of the skull from their curved surfaces, but much of the cranium was gone. More of the right side of the skeleton was intact compared with the left, she said, a sign the body had burned unevenly, possibly in different sections. In this case, she said, some of the cranial fragments did have the features we use for sex estimation, like the bump behind the ear, the mastoid process. Those are larger in males, Garvin said. Bones showed signs they had quit developing, which pointed to the remains being an adult and not a child, Garvin said. There were also signs of arthritis setting in on one of the knees. A major factor in linking the pieces to Esparza came with a few chunks of skull that housed the frontal sinus cavities. Those are located just behind the eyes. Frontal sinuses are unique, Garvin said. Even twins have different frontal sinuses. There's about 5% of the population that do not have a sinus, but if they are present, they are unique per individual. It's been used since the 1920s to make identifications. It's referred to as the fingerprint of the skull, Gavin said. Esparza had undergone a CT scan in 2018, which recorded his skull and included the front sinus cavities. She overlaid the CT scan with a radiological image of the burn barrel skull fragments and mapped out the contours, which matched. The CT scan also captured Esparza's C1 vertebrae, which matched the C1 found in the burn debris, she said. Another clue came with the remains of a right knee bone, which showed surgical tunneling that would be consistent with ACL surgery that Esparza had when he was younger, Garvin said. Those links, combined with an arm bone measurement that put the remains in Esparza's height range, were enough to back the conclusion that the bones belonged to Esparza. Garvin noted that an arm bone and a leg bone had chop marks from an edged instrument, signs of dismemberment. The next hurdle was determining a cause and manner of death, which fell to Cattellier. What do we have before us that would disprove that Jonathan Esparza died of natural causes and was then chopped up or dismembered? Asked defense attorney Nicole Watt. Quote, I can't tell what the cause of death is. However, based on my training and experience, it would be very unusual for a body to be dismembered and burned after having died of natural causes, Cattellier responded. She noted that suspicious circumstances was one of the criteria pointing to homicide. She said that includes attempts to hide evidence, hide a body, and destroy a body. Cattellier ruled the manner of death was homicidal violence, with contributing factors being blunt and sharp trauma, although she noted she could not tell if the sharp and blunt trauma was before or after death. In earlier testimony, witnesses said other artifacts found in the barrel included a beaded necklace, similar to one Esparza was wearing when he disappeared, and a key fob for a Chevrolet Impala, which is the same model that Esparza drove. Our next story, change to Waterloo's 1% tax okayed. All Blackhawk County cities renew sales tax. Cities will continue to collect their 1% local option sales tax starting in 2026, but a change will come to Waterloo's funds. All cities and the unincorporated areas in Blackhawk County voted to continue the use of a 1% local option sales tax and service tax. The measure also removed sunset dates or an expiration on the revenue, so if a city wants to change its allocation, it will have to go to an election. The cities of Waterloo and Gilbertville will change how their revenues are spent. In Waterloo, 20% of the money will go toward property tax relief, 80% toward road maintenance in 2026. Currently, 100% is for road maintenance. The cities of Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Hudson, Evansdale, Raymond, and Elk Run Heights voted as a unit, and 9,995 people, or almost 74% of those casting ballots, approved the measure. More than 26%, or 3,585 people, voted against it. Quote, we're glad the voters supported the change in usage of funds. It will certainly lower the rate of property taxes that people have to pay, said Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart, while emphasizing that the city is still prioritizing roads. He's comfortable with the change for a few reasons. One is the city's past ability to land federal funds for larger road projects. Another is his confidence in the street department's ability to accomplish more with fewer employees. Quote, if you look at the city, we have 62 square miles to cover, he said. That's a lot of density of roads to maintain, and we do an incredible job being efficient, unquote. Unofficial results show the measure did not fail in any of the contiguous cities when the results are separated out, although absentee ballots are counted as a group rather than being included with individual cities. Waterloo approved the measure 4,193 to 1,552, or 73% of the vote. Cedar Falls, it was approved 4,154 to 1,742. That's a passage rate of about 70%. Evansdale approved it by 72%, Hudson by 65%, Elk Run 64%, and Raymond 74%. Absentee votes across the six contiguous cities included a passage rate of about 77%. In Gilbertville, 50% of the funds will go to capital improvements or capital improvement debt reduction in 2026. This includes city streets, curbs, bridges, storm sewers, water, buildings, equipment, parks, and recreational facilities. More than 80% approved the measure, while 27 people, or more than 19%, voted it down. Allocations will remain the same for other non-contiguous cities and the county's unincorporated areas, all of which overwhelmingly approved the measure. The county's unincorporated areas approved it with 70% of the vote, or 261 to 111. In LaPorte City, it passed 123 to 22, which is about 85% approval. In Dunkerton, it similarly passed 47 to 9, or 84%. In Black Hawk County, a total of 15,711 ballots were cast. With 85 registered voters, that turnout was just over 18%. For Waverly in Bremer County, almost 80% approval, expanding the use of the city's local option sales tax revenues to include golf or swimming pool related improvements. That could help fund a potential new pool or a golf course clubhouse around Memorial Park. More than 20% voted against it. As for other public measures, the numbers were closer on whether or not to change the length of terms for Elk Run Heights City Council members. Council members will now have four-year terms after 57% approved the measure. More than 43% voted against it. Terms will also change for Evansdale's Library Board from current 6 years to 3 years. That passed with 67% approval. Those living in the Janesville Consolidated School District and the Union Community School District overwhelmingly voted to adopt a revenue purpose statement specifying the use of revenues from the Secure and Advanced Vision for Education Fund, also called SAVE. SAVE is a 1% sales tax collected for school districts statewide, with revenues allocated based on student enrollment. In the Janesville District, the total number of votes from Bremer and Black Hawk counties approving the measure was a little more than 86%. 13% voted against it. And in the Union District, 351 voters across four counties, or more than 85%, approved the measure, while 59 voters, or 14%, voted against it. And just a little time to just do a quick little thing on the front of the sports page. The University of Iowa's, or Northern Iowa's rather, 98-year-old West Gym will be coming down. School officials will officially ask the Iowa Board of Regents for permission to tear down the West Gym during the region's next meeting. That will take place November 15 and 16 on UNI's campus, according to an agenda posted Tuesday morning on the region's website. According to the agenda notes, the university estimates the cost of demolition and site restoration would be between $1.3 and $1.5 million and would be funded by the treasurer's temporary investments. By demolishing the West Gym, the university says it would eliminate $10.8 million in building renewal costs. In the request, the university said the West Gym has multiple building code and ADA issues, which need to be brought into compliance, on top of the $10.8 million in building renewal costs. Additionally, various building systems such as HVAC, electric, roofing, and windows are at the end of their life cycle. Estimates for remediating these deficiencies are more than $20 million, and that does not include replacing the east wall, which UNI placed temporary braces on to avoid structural collapse this summer. If approved, the plan is to raise the building with foundations and utilities removed. The basement will then be filled with soil, graded, and seeded with grass. And that is all the time we have for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, November 9th. I've been your reader, Mary Francis. You're listening to Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We're so glad to have you listening. Have a great day.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate.
Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on EarthDate.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.